Blog Talk Radio.
Peace,
can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
All right, good.
All right, Dr. Williams there?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so he'll be calling. Okay, I was making sure I was in here.
Mm-hmm.
I stated that we were going to have two shows, one just with information and the other with questions so people can call in.
Okay.
And ask some questions if they would like to.
So you want to do another episode?
Yes. So we can do part one and part two?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we're just waiting for him.
Was he cool with that?
Yes.
Oh, man.
All right, so we're just waiting for him to call in.
I ain't been on this platform in so long.
I know. It's different. But it's fine. Oh, and I got in touch with the person I was telling you about. Wait a minute. I wonder if he's trying.
I'm going to put it online now, but just as a dry rehearsal.
Okay.
You want me to do that?
It's up to you. It's a dry
rehearsal.
But I'm
not going to allow anybody to call in.
I hope he remembers how to come in by pushing one.
Well, as soon as he calls in, I will see it, but he hasn't called in.
You want me to try to call him?
Oh, I mean, that's fine.
You want me to make the attempt to try him?
Oh, yeah, you can try to call him, yeah.
Hold on.
All right.
How you do this?
Hello.
Mhm.
He must be trying to call in, because I just called his number. There's no answer.
You gave him 602-753-1647.
Yes. Let's see. All right. What I'm gonna do is hang up and call the line right back.
Mhm.
All right.
Okay. No problem.
All right.
All right, I saw that he tried to call in, Sister Freedom, but...
Okay, he's on the phone now, Dr. Williams.
Yes.
Abundance.
Yeah. Call back the number, because I saw it come up, but he hung up.
Okay, I'll call back.
Okay,
you can just hang.
Okay.
You can hang up. I'll stay on the phone.
Yeah, I got to go. I'm on the air, sweetie. Can you call back? Okay. All right.
You got to remember to push the one.
Even if he doesn't push the one, I see him when he comes in. As soon as I went to put him on the air, he disappeared.
Okay.
Here he is. All right, good brother. You're on the air.
Good to be on the air, Sister Abundance. How are you this evening?
Hey, I'm just right. All right, Sister Freedom, if you could open us up, just hold on 1 second. I'm just going to play this real quick so we have this as a part of the show. Y'all are now listening to The Build.
Drop Squad Kitchen. It's big in life. Drop Squad Kitchen, you know we the freshest. Get your body, mind, spirit on point with these veggies. It's by any greens necessary, you ain't know. That's why the chef game legendary around the globe. Soul food, make your whole crew vibrate. So roll through the Drop Squad to get the live plate. Unapologetically healthy food is wealth. But you investing in yourself, come to our place. Drop Squad. On the riverfront of Wilmington, Delaware. Visit us at dropsquadkitchen.com.
All right, all right, all right. Welcome to The Build.
I Dr. Walter Williams, we have you on the line.
Yes, and thanks
You are there. Yes, Dr. Walter Williams. He is the author of The Historical Origin of Christianity and also the author of The Historical Origin of Islam. These two books expose historical lies that we've been told for so long, and we finally got you on the phone so we can ask you some questions. You can clarify some information for us.
Okay.
All right. Well, I first would like to know, when did Christianity get started?
Which one? You talking about the origin of Christianity, when did it get started? Well, the origin of Christianity started with the image of the face of Ptolemy I, Lygi, called Soter. The word S-O-T-E-R means savior. And Ptolemy I was the successor of Alexander the Great. Now, you remember, the Greeks came into Egypt under Alexander's guidance in 332 BCE. BC dates you count down. Today's dates that we live in, you count up. We're in 15, next year 16, 17, and so forth and so on. Now, he died in 323, which is 9 years after he came into Egypt. And his army general, Ptolemy I, Lygi, called Soter, took over the rule of Egypt. Okay? And they wanted to get into the ancient Egyptian sacred society. In other words, they wanted to be accepted by our Coptic Egyptian ancestors in their sacred society, and they were refused entry. So they found a temple in Memphis, Egypt, Ptolemy I did, and they made his image into a god by taking the gods Osiris and Apis, the bull representative of Ra, and made a composite of the name, of the two names, and they gave this name, Osirapus or Serapis, to this Ptolemy. And at the Council of Ephesus, we're talking about 751 years after that image was made in 320 B.C. 751 years later, that image called Serapis was made into the Christ. You see, that's a progress that needs to be explained by way of history. So that's how they created this image that we know today as Jesus the Christ. And then the Melkite Coptic Egyptians, which are our ancestors, they created this image and the tenets of Christianity for the European. Now, I want the listeners to understand that this image that we know today as Jesus the Christ, then known as Serapis, but Serapis became Christ at the Council of Ephesus. But I will explain that if needed for me to explain that in the, later on down in the program or at another program. But anyway, this image that we know as Jesus Christ was once known as Serapis, at the Council of Ephesus. The Monophysites complained that this image had an Osiris-like spirit, but no human nature. In order to have a human nature, one has to be born through the body of a female. So at the Council of Ephesus, they took Isis out of the ancient Egyptian-African divine triad, and they created a created creature called the Virgin Mary in order for this created creature, Serapis, to have a human nature. And the Melkite Coptic Egyptians amalgamated the two created creatures together. And once that amalgamation was done, the Melkite Coptic Egyptians says, now this is the Christos. And they were speaking Greek at the time. So in today's English language, the Christos is now this is the Christ. So that is the first beginning of how this Christ, as a short overview, how this Christ image that we know today as Jesus the Christ came about. And the tenets of Christianity was created there in the ecumenical council meetings, such as the ecumenical council of Nicaea 1, 325, the council of Constantinople 1, 381, the council of Ephesus 431, the council of Chalcedon 451, and then the ecumenical council of Constantinople 2, 553. That's the fifth council meeting. The sixth council meeting was done in 680, council of Constantinople 3. And then you go down into the seventh council meeting, which one was called the Council of Hyrea, 754. And then you go into the eighth council meeting, which was the Council of Nicaea 2, 787. And then there was a last controversial argument over the image of this Christ. And that is called the Phocis Filioque controversy. That has to be explained also. But all what I just rattled off is the foundation of Christianity, how it is today. But now when the first Christian church was built over in Northeast Africa, and all the council meetings took place in Turkey, which is Northeast Africa. They misnomer it today and call it the Middle East. Now, once that seat, which was the first Christian church ever built on planet Earth, was built 532, finished 537, December the 27th, and it was called the Church of Hagia Sophia, the Church of Mary and Christ. Now, when that seat moved out of Northeast Africa in the 15th century into Europe on the outskirts of Rome, where they built the Vatican over the catacombs, then you have a different Christianity. Like today, as I speak, the world is getting European Christianity. They're not
right.
Getting what the foundation of this Christianity, what they're getting today, where it came from. It's been erased out of the minds of humans, et cetera, et cetera. But the Roman Catholic Church, they know that there's never been a man that ever walked the earth in human form of any race, creed, or color by the name of Jesus Christ. They know that historically.
But let me stop you for a minute and ask you this one question. During all of this that you're talking about with the councils and the making of Christianity, was there a Bible? Was there a Septuagint?
No, no.
Was there Injil? There was no Bible?
No Bible. The first printed Bible ever appeared on planet Earth was 1475.
1475 ever? In any other language?
None. No Bible, none.
Okay.
No language, no
sure.
Bible, none. No language, no Bible, period.
Okay.
One has to remember, you have to have a printing press. You got to go into the Renaissance era of Europe, okay, and so forth and so on. So you got to know that history, what went on when that seed of Christianity got transferred out of the Church of Hagia Sophia in the 15th century by John the Eighth, by him going into the Curia, C-U-R-I-A, in Florence, Italy. The word C-U-R-I-A means college. And that seat was transferred from Northeast Africa out of the double walled city of Constantinople, out of the Hagia Sophia, into Europe by John the Eighth, by him relinquishing the donation of Constantine. And once that was done, that was in 1439, 6 years later, over the catacombs on the outskirts of Rome, Eugenius IV and Nicholas V dug up, had those catacombs down in the ground where the Romans buried their dead, dug up to make way for the coming of the Vatican. And in 1445, they built what is known as St. Peter's Church, known today as St. Peter's Basilica. But in 1437, Johannes Gutenberg had created a printing press with movable print. You see, you've got to have a printing press with movable print. Now, at this time, the 15th century we're talking about, the Renaissance era was just beginning to get started, okay? So the Renaissance era, actually, there was a African scholar by the name of Manuel Chrysoloras that was born in Constantinople, Turkey, northeast Africa, taught at the Hagia Sophia, which Hagia Sophia, not only was a Christian church, the world's first Christian church, it was also the world's first university for Europeans. See, Europeans did not develop in Europe because they had no alphabet to develop with. They developed in northeast Africa and in Egypt, you see, by being around our ancestors, ancient Egyptians. But that goes into another history. But anyway, to answer your question, the printing press was created, okay? So now you
okay,
got a printing
press. You didn't have the printing press, but that doesn't mean that there wasn't a book, because I'm just asking. You're saying that the first printed Bible, so you mean put together in a book, right?
Okay, now what other Bible are you talking about?
I'm just asking about the Septuagint, because someone mentioned to me something about John Wycliffe.
Listen to me now.
Okay.
You're going to ask me questions. I'm going to try to give you the answer that is based on facts.
Okay, thank you.
See, I'm going to do that now. But now, when I give you these things and tell you that there was no Bible ever printed or ever being on planet Earth, period. Okay?
Okay.
We're talking about the Greek Septuagint. That's misleading information. The Greek Septuagint never happened. The Greek Septuagint was supposed to happen under Ptolemy II, the son of Ptolemy I Lagi called Sota. After his death, his son took over, Ptolemy II Philadelphus. And the story goes that Jews was in Egypt. That's a lie. Okay? And that they were Hellenized. The word Hellenized means that they were Greekized. They were made to be Greek. They lost their language, which was supposed to be Hebrew. All this is a story, which is a lie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that they lost their stories. And this is Ptolemy II Philadelphia sent to Judea and got 72 scholars, okay, out of Judea. And he called them into Egypt, and he gave each one of them a Bible to go into separate rooms to take that Bible and translate it into Hebrew, into Greek. Take the Hebrew Bible and translate it into Greek so the Jews in Egypt could read the Bible. That's a total lie, misleading. LXX is what signifies the 72 so-called Jewish scholars, okay, which is known as the Septuagint. And they're saying that Jerome, who translated that Bible into the Greek Septuagint Bible into Latin, thus making the Latin Vulgate for the Roman Catholic Church, another lie. So I'm trying to, anything I tell you is based on facts that I have researched for over 40 years now.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so
yes,
don't,
sir.
I mean, you know, I'm trying to straighten our African community out and trying to eliminate all these lies and clear up your mind, your thinking. See, I know all the stories out here, most of them anyway. You see? And I can, when
yes,
I say
sir.
That they're lies, I can tell you why they're lies. I'm just going to call them lies and say that's false and misleading information. I'll tell you why it's misleading information, and then I'll put what's right in its place.
Okay.
So go ahead.
And Christianity was the first religion, not Judaism. You know,
no.
Christianity was first.
Christianity was the world's first man-made religion ever put on planet Earth, developed by man. Today, the Europeans, when the seat was transferred out of Northeast Africa, out of the double walled city of Constantinople, out of Hagia Sophia into Europe, they used Christianity to control the masses of the world's thinking, which is used for human control.
Okay. Now, if I have always explained to people that anything with re on it, it means done over again. You know what I mean? Like these religions have been done over again so many different ways and different books.
Well, I'm going to say they were done over. They were added to. In order
added to and like different names was put on the different characters in the book from the stories and situations like that.
That's added to.
Okay.
Not done over, but they added to
it. I have a
it.
Question. I've been listening to y'all, pardon self, but I do have a question because I've heard you say this prior to this call, Dr. Williams, and you stated that Christianity is the world's first man-made religion. How did you come to that conclusion? Like, can you please give me a diagram of how you came to that conclusion?
Well, I followed Serapis all through history. Until I was convinced that there has never been a man that ever walked the earth in human form of any race, creed, or color by the name of Jesus Christ. See, you have to study world history. You can't go into religions, walk inside of a religion, and expect to learn about that religion. You won't do that. You have to stay on the outside and study everything about a religion from the outside. You can't go in believing in a religion. If you do, then you can kiss yourself goodbye. So once you stay on the outside like I did and study from the outside, okay, then I found out a whole lot of things. So how I found out that Christianity was the world's first religion, I followed a pattern, a historical pattern, starting with Serapis. Then the world's second religion was Mohammedanism. Okay? And then this Judaism as a religion is a Johnny come late, later.
So you know? Judaism was third?
Yes.
It's like the last one in a sense.
That's correct. Absolutely.
Okay. Okay.
And all now, religions are based off of mythology. There's
and
no
is Islam and Mohammedism separate? Is Mohammedism and it was Mohammedism and Islam, two separate entities.
Correct.
Okay, did Mohammedism have a book?
Well, Muhyiddin Ibn al-Arabi, alias Muhammad, wrote two pieces of literature, actually three pieces. The Futuhat and the Fusus Hakam. And the Beads of Wisdom. Okay, but that's in my book, Historical Origin of Islam. Now, when you study that book, you have to study and read the book, The Historical Origin of Islam. Have you ever read that, sister?
Yes, I've been reading it.
Now,
I've
which who am I talking to? Freedom of
Sister Freedom.
Okay.
That was a required book for all African People's Revolutionary Party. I had to read it when I was like 19 years old.
What's that? What book was that?
The book you just stated.
The Historical Origin that I wrote of Islam.
Yeah, there was a required reading.
Oh, okay. By whom?
By Kwame Ture.
Okay. Well, what year was that? I mean, I'm not doubting your word, but I was just curious to find out what year was that.
I believe it was 1994.
Well, see, here's what I'm saying, Sister Abundance, is this.
Is that not the right book?
That's not the right book. My book was first was published in 2003.
Oh, no, it's definitely not the right book. I'm probably thinking of something else. What was the name of the book?
My book is called The Historical Origin of Islam. There's never been a man that will walk the earth in human form.
No,
by the name
that's
of
not.
Prophet
I thought
Muhammad,
you said
Islam,
the historical origins of religions or something. I'm sorry, I didn't even know who wrote the book. I just know we had to read so many things, and they were on So, no, I didn't read that. But
okay,
I did
well,
read
you need to read
like
that book. And you'll find in that book, the first meeting in Islam's history was 1926.
Wait a minute.
Okay?
Oh, wow.
And
just...
I give you all the minutes of that meeting. And the first Hajj in Islam's history was 1926, the same day that they had the meeting. Okay.
Why are Muslims led to
believe
that it happened?
Wait, I don't understand. What kind of meeting?
Okay.
Are you talking about a political meeting? Are you talking about a Islamic conference? Are you talking about, what are you talking about? Like the
I'm
world,
about,
what are you talking about? The World Islamic Conference? What?
No, see, the Quran that is being used today in today's Islam was accepted by the Arab world in 1919 in Cairo, Egypt. We're talking about after World War One. World War One was 1914 to 1918. The British had toppled the Ottoman Empire. Okay? So the last of the sultans were out of office in 1918 and 1919. Okay? Now, the Arab, the AIU, Alliance Israelite Universal of Paris, France, sent a group of Jewish scholars to Syria in 1870 to compile some literature for the Arab world. Okay? And what it took him 49 years to compile that. And it was accepted in 1919, right, the year after World War One was ended in 1918, in Cairo, Egypt, by the Arab world. In 1924, the British government that had been given a mandate by the League of Nations, the League of Nations, 1920, the League of Nations today is known as the UN. They gave the British a mandate over Northeast Africa, which is today they call it the Middle East. They gave the British this mandate over the area of Northeast Africa, except for the country called Syria. They gave that to the French in 1922. Now, the British, with their mandate given by the League of Nations, appointed the king of Arabia, a man by the name of Abdul Aziz al-Saud. And he, as the king, and with this with this Quran that was accepted in 1919, they were looking to elect a caliph of Islam. So he called the first meeting in Islam's history in 1926 to have a meeting in what is known as Mecca. They call it Mecca today. Okay? Prior to that, it was no Mecca. But anyway, now you have a Mecca. And they,
wow.
So in calling this meeting, all of the Arab heads of states and the notables came to this meeting so they can elect a caliph of Islam. Okay?
Okay. That's, so what I'm just trying to make
like
sure.
Like I said before, it's in my book on page 69,
right.
The Historical Origin of Islam, page 69, the first meeting in Islam's history, 1926, with all the minutes in there, in that meeting. It was there.
But prior to the 1900s, because all these millions of Muslims are led to believe that all this is happening in 1,400 years.
Prior to
the 1900s, was there a Quran?
No.
No, ma'am.
See, you hit the word on the head, belief. See, belief does not give you knowledge because you believe. Faith does not give you knowledge. Belief only incarcerates one's mind. Your mind is being incarcerated by belief. It's just like you've been arrested and they put you in a jail cell. When you put you in a prison, they put you in a 6x9 cell, and that's where you live. That's where you do everything. Okay? So therefore, belief is very, very dangerous. Go and investigate whatever subject that you want to learn about. Find the origin of that subject, and you'll find a different ball game, and you'll find different information. You see?
It's so the reason
the Muslims,
why.
See, like, I don't. Muslims want to argue with me. I don't argue with Muslims. You know why? Because they are believers. I'm talking human history by way of research, using the discipline of history to do the research based on facts. And they're talking about what they believe.
Okay.
So, like, oil and water don't mix. So I don't argue with, if a person wants to come up to me with their belief, I don't argue with you. Find you someone else to argue with. I'm not the one. I'm not the guy. Now, if you want to listen to me,
right.
I'll be so glad to teach you everything that I know. But don't argue with me now. The moment that you want to argue with me, I'll shut you down. That's it. You know, now, that doesn't mean that I know everything. Walter Williams does not know everything. No human on earth knows everything. I only know one person that knows everything, and that person is a fool.
Dr. Williams, what is religion?
You ain't telling nothing. You see? So
no,
you're a fool.
Excuse me, since we're on the topic of religion, can you please tell us what your definition of religion is, since you're stating, you know, Christianity started here, Islam started here, so that people won't feel like they have to argue or ask questions. Well, what is religion?
Religion is a subject that man created to indoctrinate man's mind into a belief, into what is being put out there for him to believe. And with that, him believing what they put out there for them to believe, they can control his thinking and his actions. Like Carter G. Woodson said, if you can control a man's thinking, you do not have to worry about his actions. If he has been trained to go to a back door of a building, once he finds by going to the back door, there's no door, he'll make one. Now, you take Jesse Jackson. Where was Jesse Jackson today in Al Sharpton? What do you think they were today, Sunday? In a church.
In a church.
In a church. They've been trained that way. So you don't have to worry about his action. So now, religion, that's religion. See, no human on earth was born with a religion. If an individual comes up to me and says, I am a Christian, I'm a Muslim, I'm a black Hebrew Israelite, I'm a Jew, I'm a Buddhist, I'm a Hindu, I'm a Zoroastrian, I'm a this or that, that means that you're telling me that you have embraced one of these man-made religions, okay? Also, you're telling me that you know nothing about your personal humanity. You see, you know nothing about it. You see? So you're telling me you know nothing about yourself as a human being. You see, how does people get a religion? Okay, good question. An individual has a mother and a father, and this mother and a father, male and female, have a sexual intercourse. The male sperm fertilizes the female's egg. And from that fertilization of the male sperm, within 9 months, another human is on his way out of the incubated womb of his mother. Are you following me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, once that baby is pulled out of the mother's womb, that baby is attached to her umbilical cord. Her umbilical cord is cut at that point to separate the baby from the mother. Okay, what did that umbilical cord do? That umbilical cord, during the 9 months of incubation, fed that fetus air, water, and food. So once coming out of that mother's womb, umbilical cord is cut, and what had developed within that 9 months was life. So the child comes out, that includes you and I. What we were given at the time we came out of our mother's womb was what? Life, not a religion. There's nothing on your birth certificate that says abundance or freedom is a Christian. Nothing on there. Don't say that. You were given everything that you will spiritually need to sustain yourself as long as you live. You were given it free. You were given everything that you need to spiritually sustain yourself. But you were not given a religion. Your parents, I'm not saying you, but an individual's parents who happens to be a Christian, they, once this child is out into the world, during its early infancy and early childhood, the parents passes a disease and a virus to that child. And that disease and the virus is called a religion called Christianity. That disease and the virus may be called Islam. That disease and that virus may be called a Black Hebrew Israeliteism. That disease and the virus may be called Judaism. It may be called Buddhism. It may be called Hinduism. It may be called Zoroastrianism. Some man-made religion was passed on to that child in his early age of innocence as a child. They couldn't say, Mom, Dad, I don't want to be a Christian. They couldn't do that. So they grow up believing in this foolishness, this garbage, this junk. And they take them down to old Reverend C.T. Chicken Wings Church and introduce them to Chicken Wing. And he takes them and indoctrinates them, baptizes them in the name of Jesus. And they grow up with a big cross around their neck and they join the choir. They don't know what the hell they're doing. They don't know anything about Christianity. A Christian, a Muslim, or any individual who have embraced a religion don't know anything about that religion. They have embraced this religion strictly on belief. They don't know about it historically. You see? So this is where I come in. I try to bring to our African community information that will provoke thought, whereby with this information that hopefully will provoke thought, then you can begin the liberation process in your life. That's all I'm about. I don't ask you for nothing. I don't want to be your leader, because I will never let another human being to follow me, because no human on earth was born to follow another human. I don't want that. And I don't want any of your money. I'm not doing this for money. I'm not selling books for money. I don't do that. I don't make my living doing that. If you want to buy the book, you buy it. If you don't, hey, don't worry about it. Okay? So what I'm saying.
Now, I know, Dr. Williams, I know that you did make a little offer that if anybody can, come against anything that you stated. Is that offer still on the table?
Yes, ma'am. Been on there for over 20-something years. This offer goes like this. Anybody of any race, creed, or color, including the Pope, who can repudiate me and repudiate history, when me and history saying that there's never been a man that ever walked the earth in human form of any race, creed, or color by the name of Jesus Christ. If you can use the discipline of history now, you cannot use the Bible or what you think or what you believe to make what you think and believe right. You can't use your emotions to do that. In my two books, there's not one biblical reference. In my Christianity book, not one biblical reference. In the Islam book, coming from the Quran, I use strictly the discipline of history. So if you can use the discipline of history and write down on paper when, how, and where a character by the name of a Jesus Christ walked this earth as a human being, I will give you $5,000. That's the award.
But what
now,
is
if you can't if you can't do it, then if you can go and find somebody to do it, then I will give you a $2,000 award for finding that individual. That's my offer.
Is the Prophet Muhammad also in that bet?
Also in all the biblical characters. Buddha's in there. This Prophet Muhammad is in there. All of these, Abraham is in there. All of them.
Okay, I got one more question to ask you, and not to be questioning you. I'm asking the question because it was asked to me, okay? You
okay.
said that first Quran, okay, was introduced to the Muslims, the Islamic world, in 1926, correct? Or did I have
no,
that wrong?
No, 1919.
But it's
the
funny.
The first meeting in Islam's history was 1926.
Okay, but it's funny because I was just wondering how, if it was just in 1919, did Noble Drew Ali and Abundance, I'm only asking because I know that you know a lot about the history of Noble Drew Ali. How did he start the Moore Science Temple? Wasn't he in some form? He started that in 1913. So
it's
how,
okay, he can do that.
Wait a minute. I'm asking.
1913, Mohammedanism was still out there. Okay.
Okay.
And so he could have easily done that.
Okay.
So
Mohammedism was still out there.
Correct.
Okay.
Mohammedism started when the Ottoman Turks. It started when Ibn al-Arabi. He died in 1240. In 1239, his disciples began to preach his doctrine all over North Africa and in Egypt and so forth and so on, okay? And 61 years later, when the Ottoman Turks created the Ottoman Empire in 1300, they embraced that doctrine of Mohammedan Ibn al-Arabi, alias Muhammad, and went up to people under their control, under the Ottoman Empire, and with a sword, and said, Muhammad or die. So they are everybody's Islam alaikum. They'd rather Islam alaikum than to die.
Right, but what they say is Noble Drew Ali, Elijah Muhammad, they had a Quran. They had a Quran, and you said that the Quran was in.
Yeah, they had a Quran, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, so I'm trying to figure out, if they had the Quran, how wasn't the
how did
Quran
it not
made
exist before 1920 is what you're saying.
Wait. Yes. What Quran did they have? That's what
right.
You got to find out. What Quran did Noble Drew Ali have in 1923? What Quran did he have? The Quran, today's Quran, was accepted by the Arab world in 1919. Now, it was the Jews out of France who created today's Quran. That was in 1870. The AIU, the Alliance Israelite Universal of Paris, France, sent a group of Jewish scholars in Syria to create a Quran for the Arab world. Okay? Now, in today's Quran, interspersed in that Quran, you have the Pentateuch and Psalms in there. That is Jewish writings. Also in today's Quran, interspersed in that today's Quran, you have the four Christian Gospels. Now let's go back.
So you got the first five books of the Bible, the Psalms,
about
and the Gospels.
What did you say about that?
I was just taking notes.
In today's Quran, interspersed, you have.
But what do you mean when you say today's Quran? Because it's more than one version of the Quran. It's a holy Quran.
That's not important about the versions. Let's go back to the origin of it. See,
but that's what's making it confusing, because if Noble Drew Ali had a Quran, and if it's a different
what
version.
What year did he have his Quran?
1913.
Did he start the religion of his sect, SECT, in 1913?
Yes. According to what it's saying, it says that he started the Moorish Science Temple in 1913, but that means that he had information prior to that.
That has nothing to do with the Quran, though. He got his revelation. He used to be a longshoresman, and he went to Egypt and got a revelation. And his name was Timothy Drew. That was his name. And then he, after he got his revelation, then he came up and said, "I'm Noble Drew Ali." Okay? And he began to preach his doctrine and created a sect, S-E-C-T. That doesn't mean that he had a Quran. He was only teaching.
He was a former Muslim of Islam, but I do hear you saying that it was a Mohammedism at the time.
Mohammedism was out there. Was out there.
But I was just wondering if Mohammedism had a form of a Quran. Mohammedism has a book.
Let me tell you this. I told you earlier in the program. Mohammedan Ibn al-Arabi, alias Muhammad.
Said he had three books.
Three books, right? The Fatwa Hat, Al-Kim, and the Bezels of Wisdom. Those are his three writings. Okay? And if you get my book, The Historical Origin of Islam, I give you excerpts from all three of those books. It's in there.
Okay.
But you have to read my book.
Okay.
Then ask me questions. If you haven't read anything, what I've written, then you'll be confused. That means
if you haven't read my
work, then you're not interested in learning the truth.
Where can we find your work other than on Amazon? Because I pulled it up. The Historical Origin of Islam is very affordable, people. Y'all can go check it out on Amazon.com. Do you have it anywhere else?
Well, any of your African bookstores, a lot of them, has gone out of business. Okay, back in the early 90s and the middle 90s, there were plenty of African bookstores. But since then, they have went out of business. So Amazon and what's this other company, bookstore? Other bookstores are selling, those white European bookstores are selling my books. And it's being sold all over America, in the UK, in the Caribbean, and all in English-speaking countries. I have three distributors that distributed my books. But anyway, if you get my book, read the book more than once, study the book, and then have me on. Then you'll see where I'm coming from.
I'm not saying I don't see it. I'm just saying I'm making sure of the questions that I'm asking you that the listening audience knew you were coming on, so they wanted me to ask questions.
Okay,
so
then I tell your listening audience to go and buy my book.
That's fine.
That's how you do that. That's the most intelligent way to do that. You got all this he said, she said, and tradition out here. Okay? So Noble Drew Ali didn't have a Quran.
Oh, snap.
Okay.
He taught, I'm hearing him. He didn't have a Quran. He started his movement right here in Chicago. And in fact, the building where he founded is on the north side of Chicago. It's still there. I went over there. I've been over there. Okay, I met with the brothers and so forth and so on. But Noble Drew Ali is buried in Burr Oak Cemetery. You got a mausoleum there. So when you go into Burr Oak Cemetery, you see the mausoleum of Noble Drew Ali. He died in 1929 after he was jailed by the Chicago police and they beat him. And right after they released him, he died. So what I'm saying to you is this. Today's Quran, you have Jewish writings in it and you have Christian writings in it. Tradition is telling you this, that a prophet Muhammad of today's Islam, Fred Mecca in 622. This is tradition. After fleeing Mecca in 622, he met an angel by the name of Gabriel. And Gabriel told Muhammad what God wanted Muhammad to pass on to mankind. Muhammad, they said, was illiterate, that he memorized the words of the angel Gabriel that God wanted him to pass on to mankind, and he dictated that to a scribe. And the scribe, from his dictation of Muhammad, that dictation created the Quran. You heard that story?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, I have. Yes.
Okay, all right. Now, that's in 622, 7th century. Now, in the 6th century or 7th century, there was no Jews, no place on planet Earth. There was no Bibles, no place on planet Earth. There was no Quran, no place on planet Earth. That was supposed to be the first Quran. But there was no Jew back then. Secondly, you had Christians in the 7th century, but you did not have Christian writings or literature. Christian writings came in 1516, the 16th century, by way of a man by the name of Desiderius Erasmus, writing literature for the object of the Roman Catholic Church. The object of the Roman Catholic Church is Jesus the Christ. So today's Quran, you got Jewish literature in there, but was no Jews back in the 7th century. In today's Quran, you got Christian literature in there, but it was no Christian literature back in the 7th century. You see? See? So
right.
That's,
so what you're saying,
there's
other
a discrepancy
words,
there.
So
but
what
you
you're
have to
saying?
Know human, you have to know human history to know this.
Right.
You see?
So what
and
you're
let
saying,
me tell you this.
Okay.
Do you know why the AIU, the Alliance Israelite Universal of Paris, France, which is a group of scholar Jews, was sent over in Syria in 1870 to create a Quran for the Arab world? You know why? Because
why?
They was the only one that would have put Abraham in the stories in that Quran. Don't you see, Abraham is the biblical character that keeps the glue for all three major Western religions. You see? Nobody else would have put Abraham in there. See, Abraham is in all three religions, Christianity, Islam, and Judaism. Okay? They said that this Abraham's grandson was Jacob. That Jacob had was named, changed his name to Israel. And he had the 12 tribes of Israel. This is all how the story goes. And from the 12 tribes of Israel, one of his children was named Judah. And from the tribe of Judah, that's where Jesus came from. So they said that Jesus was a Jew. Has nothing to do with the religion, has something to do with that name, Judah. You see that? So,
yeah.
This offspring of Judah is the great grandchildren of Abraham. So Abraham ties in with Christianity and that Jesus the Christ as a Jew. You got that? Now,
yes.
How does Abraham tie into Islam? That one morning he woke up. He was 100 years old, and he went to his wife Sarah and said, "Sarah, I want you to have a baby for me." And she says, "No, I can't have no more babies. It's over with, okay? I'm 85, I'm zipped it up, it's over with for me, okay?" She said, "You go to your Egyptian handmaiden, Hagar." You heard the story?
Yes.
Go to Hagar, and she will have a baby for you. So 100 years old, Abraham goes and gets Hagar. Now, they didn't have no Viagra back there. And he had sex with Hagar, and they had Ishmael. Ishmael is supposed to be the progenitor of the Muslims. You see that? Now, Abraham was who came out of the tribe with Abraham? Moses. All these are lies. They tie in the three major Western religions. And Moses is supposed to be the one who created the religion called Judaism. Okay? That's the founder of Judaism. for he is in the family of Abraham. You see? So
we have one minute,
AIU had to have this Jewish group of scholars to come into Syria and create for the Arab world a Quran. But it, like I said before, in today's Quran, inspiration there is the Pentateuch and Psalms, Jewish writings. Inspiration in today's Quran is the four Christian Gospels, Mark, Matthew, and Luke, and John. Okay? So back in the 7th century when this Muhammad was supposed to have fled Mecca, meeting the angel Gabriel, there was no Jews around on earth, and there was no Christian literature for the Christians on planet earth. Okay? So you have to really, really understand and study the discipline of history. Then all of these things will come up by way of human history instead of coming up as traditional lies.
Okay, well, you know that we're going to have two and maybe three parts to get all of this information.
Yeah, but honestly, I respect what he said. I just purchased the book on Amazon.com. I'm going to read it, and then we'll come back and do part two, Dr. Williams.
Okay, anytime you want me to come on, as many times you want to, I'm here, I'm for you. Now, let me tell you about the angel Gabriel. The angel Gabriel is a little bird. That's what the angel Gabriel is. And guess who taught the angel Gabriel? The monster, the six-tongued Herod monster, Israfil. See, you got four angels in today's traditional Islam. You got Gabriel, Israfil, Mikael, and you got Raphael. Those are the four angels of Islam. Okay? So now, here you have a little bird now, who is the angel Gabriel, being taught by a six-tongued Herod monster, Israfil. See? You have to investigate what these people are telling you. Stop firing people without investigating. Now, here's what I suggest you do. Now, you heard everything I said, right?
Yes, sir.
Go and investigate behind me. Investigate Walter Williams. That's where you do that. If you find Walter Williams wrong, call me out on it. And say, Walter Williams, you said thus and thus, and I find that's wrong. Now, after you tell me what you found, what I said is wrong, then you find what's right to be put in this place.
Right.
That
ends the argument. Okay, so I just want to, because I know we got to go ahead on and cut. I'm just saying I want the listening audience to hear you say, so they can go check it out, Islam is not 1,400 years old.
Oh, of course not.
And Christianity, about how much time do you think Islam truly is?
I put it like this. From the time that they accepted the Quran. See, today's Islam is based upon a book called the Quran. So they accepted the Quran in 1919. So you figure in the 20th century, from 1919 up to today. That's it.
Mm.
And the Muslims, I know they're going to have a baby with a bonnet. But they just have to have their baby.
And Christianity. How old do you think Christianity actually is?
Christianity started in 751 at the Council of Ephesus in 431. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Christianity started in 431. And you count from 431 all the way up to 2015. So you got 1,500 years, a little over 1,500 years.
And it was colonized into Africa all that time?
No. It was created in Africa, in Northeast Africa, by our ancestors. They're the ones that created that for the European. Understand that now. It wasn't created for us Africans, or them Africans, the Melkite Coptic Egyptians. It wasn't created for them. They created it for the European. He wanted to have an image of himself accepted in our ancient African Egyptian sacred temple society. They refused to do that because our ancestors did not race mix. They did not take foreigners into the temple society. Okay? So, remember that. It was created for the European. And once the seat of Christianity was transferred out of Northeast Africa, the double wall city of Constantinople. Constantinople today is Istanbul, Turkey. From the world's first Christian church, the Hagia Sophia, built in 532, finished in 537, December 27th. That seat was transferred out of Northeast Africa into Europe in 1439. Okay? And as 6 years later, in 1445, Eugenius IV, Nicholas V, dug up on the outskirts of Rome the catacombs so they can make way for the building of the Vatican. The Vatican today, as I speak, is nothing but a designed replica of the double wall city of Constantinople, okay, in Northeast Africa, okay? And, and at that point, they unleashed a monster on the whole entire world. And the monster that they unleashed on the whole entire world is Jesus the Christ. And we,
right,
as African people, going into these churches, worshiping a dead white man on a cross that don't look like us. Okay? When you go into the churches and worship this dead white man on the cross, you're supporting white supremacy, white superiority. You're supporting African, black inferiority. That's what you're doing. You're making yourself inferior. You're making yourself a powerless people, because when you go in there, you give all your power away to this God. You tell this white man, oh, I love you, you're my God, okay? And when you come out of that church, if you're praying to this white man, he'll kill your children in the streets. He'll lock you up for any minor offense for a lifetime, for many, many years. Do all kinds of hideous things to us as a people. Put us into slavery, lynched us. From 1880 to 1940, they had over 4,000 lynchings and so forth and so on. All these things that this European is doing to us as a people, but yet still our people go into these churches and worship and bow down to this image, this white image on the cross, and say, oh, you're my God. Something is wrong with that. Just stop that.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
Let me ask you this and let you go. Do you think that the white race will take their children and their family into a church where a big black African Jesus is hanging on the cross and tell and teach their children that that black Jesus on that cross is their God and Savior? You think they would do that? Want me to give you the answer? Hell no. That's the answer. Okay? So the next question for Christians, what and who is your African God? What is the name of your African God? Do you have one that looks like you, us? That's the question. Okay, sisters.
Okay.
Thank you for having me on. Anytime that you want to have me on, just give me a call. But you give me a call a week before. Let me know what day you want me on so we can clear that date and time, okay?
Thank you so much, Dr. Williams.
Okay.
And we're going to read your book.
Then you can come back and you see what I got in there, and then you can, you know, ask questions from that point. You can ask questions anyway if you don't read it, but still know. It would be better if you read the book, then you see where I'm coming from. It's like I don't argue with Muslims, okay? Now, have you read my book, young man? No, I haven't read your book. I was on a brother named Aleem Bey's show a couple of years back. And this Muslim, he's going to call me up and challenge me about me saying no Prophet Muhammad. I said, have you read my book? No, I haven't read your book and don't want to read it. I said, okay, well then, if you haven't read my book, you don't know what I said in there. You don't know whether I'm right or wrong. So it's best for you to do an intelligent individual, read the book, something you find that's wrong, challenge me on it. But just don't call it with your emotions.
Because
I'm not going to argue with you.
And in your books, you reference where they can find the information, correct?
Yeah, you can repeat that again.
in your books, because you know people are going to ask questions because this is odd to them because they still have the minds of a slave. They don't realize that they are descendants of slaves and that any information that we probably have within our minds now, we never had in our minds prior to coming over here in, you know, in slavery. So I'm asking you, in your books, you do put references where they can find the information.
I have, in my Islam book, I have 27 books of bibliography, maybe 35. But in my Christianity book, I have 25 books of reference by way of bibliography. So I have them in there, yes.
Yes, that is very important to have the information there, especially about Ibn Ali Rabi.
You see, what you can do, Sister Freedom and Sister Abundance, with an alias. You see, you got Mujahideen Ibn al-Arabi, alias Muhammad. Okay? Now, you can take that alias and attach stories to that alias. Make that alias into anything that you want to make it in. It's just like Richard Reeves, alias Superman, who come from Krypton, who goes into a phone booth and changes his clothes from a three-piece suit and an attaché briefcase. He changes into a Superman outfit, opens the door, and flies up into the air. You see that? So you got a different character. But Richard Reeves can't do that. Okay? But his alias, Superman, can do that. You see? Now, you got Sean Connery, who plays 007, or James Bond. James Bond can jump off of high, tall buildings and go and break through a glass roof below. Okay? And he still got his hat on. Got his shirt and tie in place, everything. Not one scratch on him. See? But Sean Connery can't do that as a human being. But his alias can do that. They got Clayton Moore, alias the Long Ranger. You see? And he goes around, he's a mass man with a gun that shoots silver bullets. And he's got a sidekick named Tonto. And they've got all that. See, they can build up this character. You see? But here you got Mujahideen Ibn al-Arabi, alias Muhammad. Okay? So they took Muhammadanism. The Jews did, from the AIU, Alliance Israelite Universal Parish Friends. They took Muhammadanism and remodeled Muhammadanism into today's Islam. You read my book, I'll give you what they have done in there, and I'll show you the parallels that they how they have done it. It's there. You see? So all these things, I'm telling you something that none of the scholars, other scholars, are telling you. Okay?
Yeah, you are.
I wrote those two books for the African community to liberate us out of this ignorance. We can no longer go along believing in something that you know nothing about. Investigate what these people are telling you.
You
know the difference. You know a lie when you see it. See, listen, the lie is not your friend. Remember that. A lie is not your friend. A lie is very dangerous. It's very dangerous to believe in something. Don't believe in nothing until you investigate it. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Okay, I just want to throw that out to you.
We will be reading the book, and we will be giving you a call back because we got more questions. And I think the next time, Abundance, you probably going to let the listening audience in to ask one question?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
All right, well, for so much for coming on the build. We enjoyed the whole conversation because it's making my mind want to start studying a lot of things. A lot of things have been told. A lot of information we've been told. So we thank you.
I'm out here assisting abundance, trying to straighten this misinformation out. I heard Dr. John Henry Clark, who came to Chicago one time and gave a lecture at Kennedy King College. I was in attendance there. And the first thing out of his mouth after stepping up to the microphone, he said, "We, as an African people, can no longer allow anybody of any race, creed, or color, no matter how much you like them, to bring misinformation into our community. We can't have that no more. Okay? We've been loaded down with misinformation. Okay? Things like that. I mean, you know, so we have to stop that. So if a person is bringing misinformation into our community, I'll call them out. Okay? So
and
that's
I
what
believe
I have to say
that
about that. And I'm writing, my wife and I, we are writing a third book called Dispelling Myths of Ancient Egypt. Okay, repudiating the Hyksos, a warning to all African scholars, teachers, intellectuals, and students, do not use the chronology of ancient Egypt as it is written today. The ancient Egyptians never wrote a chronology or a history of themselves. If so, produce it, I say. The chronology of ancient Egypt was created by Western academia. First dynasty, second dynasty, this pharaoh, that pharaoh, and so forth and so on. And they used biblical references to prove their point. They had to create a chronology of ancient Egypt in order to institutionalize our ancestors' culture and civilization. So this is what they did. They had to say that they deciphered the hieroglyphics, Champollion, which the hieroglyphics, the Melanesian hieroglyphics, has never been deciphered. But they had to do that and institutionalize it so they can teach the students at these universities and create them to be Egyptologists and so forth and so on. So they want to control our ancestors' culture and civilization. And this is what they did. So I'm writing this book, my wife and I, repudiating the Hyksos, warning to all African scholars, do not use the chronology of ancient Egypt. Why? Because ancient Egyptians never wrote a history or chronology of themselves. This chronology was created by Western academia using the Bible, and I put five different chronologies in this book to show and demonstrate and make the point of what I'm talking about. Okay? And repudiating the biblical Persian myth. Okay? I'm also repudiating saying why the Melanesian hieroglyphics has never been deciphered. I'm putting in the historical book, Original Christianity, the book I wrote, on page 146, that I have an appendix chapter in there why the Melanesian hieroglyphics has never been deciphered. In this book, I'm putting that same repeated chapter in my new book, but I'm adding appendix to the appendix. I'm talking about the rebus system. See? Something that this information should be known in the African community. See? About the rebus system, what the Germans did to those hieroglyphics and so forth and so on. Okay? And then I'm writing, instead of the chronology of ancient Egypt, I'm writing everything that came out of the culture of our ancestors, the ancient Egyptians' culture, such as they were the first and only literate people on planet Earth during the time of antiquity. What makes an individual literate is one knowing the alphabet. Our ancestors had and created and invented the world's first alphabet, so they were the world's first literate people. Okay? By them inventing that alphabet. With that alphabet, you can write, read, and spell. Okay? Also, they created mathematics. That's how they, of all forms of mathematics, that's how they built the Great Pyramid, that they built 490 feet high. And the base on all four sides is 756 feet wide on all four sides. They built the Sphinx. The body of the Sphinx is one city block long, six stories high, with an African face carved in stone. to let you know that that's who built the Great Pyramid, that's who built the Great Sphinx, that's who brought civilization to this whole world. If you saw the movie Selma, there's a scene in there where this actress was playing Amelia Boynton Robinson, who just died some months back. She was walking down the street with the actress who was playing Coretta Scott King, and she told Coretta Scott King in this movie Selma, she said, "We come from a great people." Did you see the movie?
Yes, I remember that part.
He said, "We come from a great people, a people who brought civilization to the world." That's where we have to get back to. We can no longer call ourselves black people, Negroes. Negro and black is synonymous. We cannot no longer call ourselves African American. We're going to have a remake of our people living in America who are Africans. 44 million. Going to have to change if you want to grow. We have to grow as a people. You can't grow sitting in the damn pews of a church, giving away all your power to this white man, and you calling him your God, and you want to drink some wine for his blood. You want to eat a wafer for his body. This is cannibalistic. Okay, so we have to stop all this foolishness. Okay, come out of it. Now, you hear my voice, I'm saying these different things. Whoever wants to get mad at me, fine, you can get mad at me, no problem. I have no problems with that. But I still love you, and I'm doing this out of love. That's all. You owe me nothing. But you pay me back by telling me that what you have read in my books, what you have heard coming out of my mouth, provoked your thought and your thinking, and from that provoked your thought, from my words and from my writing, you were liberated. I get many calls and many emails from people all around the world, in fact, out of the country, telling me how my work has helped liberate them out of this dilemma.
Yes, that I really can believe it.
Yeah, so we're gonna have to do just that, and we're gonna have to stop being entertained. There's a lot of entertainers out here who are passing themselves off as historians, but they're out here entertaining you. Okay?
Yes, sir.
You can no longer be entertained anymore. You have to know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. It's the only way you're going to be free.
Has anyone tried to ever debate you, Dr. Williams?
Of course, many times.
Mm-hmm.
But see, when I ask them questions, they can't answer. Ministers try to tell me about what the Bible says. I say, okay, tell me when the first Bible was printed on planet Earth. What country was it printed in? What city in that country was it printed? What alphabet was used to print that Bible? What was the who formulated that Bible to be printed? Who using whose material for the formulation of that Bible? And what was the Orthodox name of it? Can't tell me. New Testament. Who was the first one to propound the New Testament? What year? And what was in the New Testament? Can't tell you that, because they have been taught by tradition. They're going by belief. They don't go by belief. I have to investigate before I come out and make it and clear it to be spoken or written to give to my African community.
Right.
You see that? So
yeah.
Not out here trying to make money off of my African community. I don't need your money. Don't need it. You know how you pay me back? So you called and said, "Dr. Williams, I read your book. I heard your lectures.
Yeah.
You liberated me. You paid me. You were paying me when you said that to me. See, that's my pay. And you got your money in your pocket, and you got a different mindset. I heard Al Sharpton say one day, he says, if a person does not want to hear something new, that person does not want to grow.
Right.
He's right. You have to have something new. You can't keep repeating the same thing over and over and over again. The pro- problem with us Africans in this United States of America is the church. That's the problem. The religion called Christianity. You in there, you praying. Praying is a form of begging. You praying to this white man on the cross. That's your God and Savior. Then when you come out of praying to him, and begging him, you got to come right outside of that church after you get through off your knees and beg this other white man, the same white man that you begged in the church for jobs and justice. That makes sense. Think. That's all.
You're coming.
We're going
to
thank you again.
Well, I wanted to thank you, Dr. Williams. You know, you were just very proficient in just many things. Jarrell Lee did not have a Quran. I love that. And I think that, you know, for us to even have a further conversation, we need to be even qualified to even be asking you questions, because even though I think that we think that we're conscious,
uh-huh.
we're not necessarily aware. And so some of the questions that Sister Freedom and myself might ask, and callers might ask, are going to come from a religious state of mind and a Christian perspective. So,
okay, I'm ready.
You know, people are not doing their research, and so everything is coming from a religious mind. So, I want us to be prepared. I want to prepare the audience. So I want to thank you again, because I don't want us to get cut off, and I look forward to doing part two with you very soon.
Okay, you call me and let me know.
Yes, sir.
So I said to you, Mayat Hotep. Don't say Hotep by itself. Say Mayat, because you put the female in there. And the female balances Hotep. Hotep is male. Mayat is female. So Mayat Hotep to both of you all.
Mayat Hotep.
All right. Peace.